Liechtenstein isn't just one of the world's smallest countries, it's one of the most prosperous. Despite having just 37,000 citizens and covering just 61 square miles in Central Europe, the microstate has a per capita income of about $100,000, a corporate flat tax of 12.5%, and an income tax of 1.2%. Now well known as a banking and financial hub, the principality wasn't always so flush. In fact, in 1967, the royal family had to sell a prized possession, Leonardo da Vinci's first known portrait, just to keep the country afloat.
When I studied economics and law in the 60s, prevailing wisdom that was that small countries like Liechtenstein have no future. No economic future, no political future.
We talked with the country's leader, Prince Hans Adams II, at the International Students for Liberty Conference in Washington, D.C., about how Liechtenstein turned itself around while becoming world famous for its banking privacy and for its openness to immigrants. And we talked about the prince's new book about the future of government, The State in the Third Millennium. Prince, thanks for talking to us.
Yeah, fine.
First off, you're at the International Students for Liberty Conference. Talk about your interest in reaching a new generation of people who believe in classical liberal ideals of free minds and free markets.
Well, it was so that I wrote the book, which has been on how the state should evolve in this third millennium, which is sort of a very liberal or very free market model. And so I've been invited to make speeches and take part in discussions. So I got an invitation to come here too.
One of the things that Liechtenstein is best known for is its banking and financial securities sector. Talk a bit about the role of Liechtenstein as a place both where taxes were low, so it acted as a haven from other countries, but then also how, by guaranteeing the privacy of the funds there, how did that not just help Liechtenstein, but how does that help the rest of the countries of people who might be dealing with you?
It was introduced quite early, and it was also introduced and strengthened, like in Switzerland, also I think after World War I, to protect political refugees, especially also Jews, Jewish people, who saw the danger and persecution coming or were persecuted. There it was important somehow to protect them, also then afterwards from Eastern Europe. So that was the background, but that has now been, we have been forced, Switzerland and Liechtenstein, to open up.
Right.
So we had basically had to abolish the banking secrecy.
What gets lost when banking secrecy goes away? Because in the United States often, and certainly in Europe, they'll say, well, the only people who want secrets are people who have something to hide. But that's not the end of the story, is it?
It's not the end of the story. I think we have states where people are persecuted, who have managed to hide some money outside to flee, to save themselves and their family. If we don't have a certain privacy, we still have it to a certain degree, but we have to give in when there are some requests.
Right. How do you deal with immigration? And this is a fascinating question. In the American election, we have the Republican Party is incredibly hostile to immigration. In Europe, we're seeing hostility or pushback from Syrian refugees or people from outside of Europe coming there, but also within the European Union. The Irish don't want Polish people coming there, and the Germans don't want, you know, Italian people coming there. How do you deal with immigration in this kind of situation?
Well, we in Liechtenstein had a tradition that we had quite a high level of foreigners, about 40%.
And as if I'm right, I think it may be the high, Liechtenstein may have the highest percentage of foreign-born population in Europe.
I would say so. Yeah. And we also took in refugees with a tradition to take in, of course, only a certain amount. We cannot take 100,000 in.
Yeah.
But there we have a tradition, and we have been able to integrate them quite well.
With the common European market, has that been a success or a failure in your view, and or is it coming apart? Because even as we speak, the British are talking about possibly exiting.
It seems to me that the original idea of the European Union to create the United States of Europe, I think that is not going to be realized. So I think on the political side, we are probably going to move backward. But on the economic side, I think there will be a further deepening, I would imagine. Mm-hmm.
So that it's Europe itself will be a large trading bloc with either no or very few tariffs and
yes.
Rules between.
Yes, I think that.
In your book, you discuss how the state should really only be involved in a relatively few things,
yeah.
But do those well. What are the things that the state should be involved in, and how do you determine where the role of the state ends?
Well, in my book, and also what we more or less realized in Liechtenstein through also some changes to constitution, through direct democracy, it's basically to have the rule of law. So that works off. Then, of course, you need foreign policy. You have to have the educational system. And there I'm very much in favor of a voucher system.
How does that fit in with the contemporary European and actually North American welfare state, where in the United States, for instance, about something like 2/3 of all spending is on healthcare, is on old age pensions, it's on transfer payments, it's about a social
yeah.
safety net as opposed to those other things. How do we change that balance?
As we, as a very small state, we can do it ourselves. So it means that I think also small communities like small cities or villages even can have their own social system. And what also I'm proposing is to have a separation between indirect taxation, which would be with the state, and all direct taxation with the local communities, where you have direct democracy also on a state level. Mm-hmm. But that should take care of the social expenses. Mm-hmm.
Are you optimistic? There's a lot of pessimism, about the global marketplace. The economy globally is not good. It's weak in various parts of Europe. The Middle East is a nightmare. China seems to be falling. North and South America are kind of languishing. Are you optimistic about the future? And if so, what drives your optimism?
Well, I think if I look back the 20th century, it could have been much, much worse. We were lucky. It could have ended in an atomic war, God knows what. It would have been World War III or whatever. We still don't live in a perfect world. And for me, it was also to write the book and so to try to influence in what way we should go so that we live in a more peaceful and more prosperous world. I think that's important. I think the politicians who are influential should think about new models, how to do it, how to deal with all these problems.
Well, we will leave it there. Thank you so much for talking with us.
Fine.
We've been talking with Prince Hans Adam of Liechtenstein. For Reason TV, I'm Nick Gillespie.